Killer Innovations Podcast for Sunday, April 3rd, 2005.
Scene one, Apple, take one.
Hello, this is Phil McKinney and welcome to the podcast. I'm an executive at a leading high-tech company where I oversee tech strategy and R&D for one of the business units. I know some of the listeners have asked for the reason why I don't name a company. The main reason is that the work that I'm doing on this podcast is my own personal work and it's not related to the company. So therefore, I'm doing this as an individual and not part of my day-to-day job responsibilities. And why this podcast? One is that I have a real passion and been doing a lot of research over the years around innovation. What qualifies as innovation? What can be learned from those who we view as being innovative? And how do we apply that innovation to our day-to-day lives, both in our business and in personal lives? Before we get started, one, I wanted to say thanks for the feedback from those listeners that have dropped me in emails or contacted me via Skype or who've posted comments on some of the directories. So again, thanks for that feedback. I'm constantly looking for more feedback, positive, constructive topics, things you would make suggestions on how I can improve the podcast is always appreciated. You can send me an email at podcast@philmckinney.com or you can Skype me at phil_mckinney. I do have voicemail on the Skype account, so feel free to go ahead and contact there, and you can leave me a voicemail. And if I get interesting messages on the Skype, I'll actually put those into future podcasts. And also, don't forget, if I'm not sure which directory you found this podcast from, but I would encourage you to go back to those, post comments and feedback and the reviews of this podcast, and also don't forget to vote. Before we get started any further, I need to go and put in the disclaimer, as I normally do. So let's just be very clear. The opinions expressed in this podcast are mine and mine alone, and don't necessarily reflect those of my past, current, or future employers. So I'm putting together this podcast from London. Came over Thursday during the day. We spent yesterday touring some of the museums, the Victoria and Albert Museum at the New Arts and Crafts exhibit, and then went over to the London Design Museum, where we looked at a new exhibit on information design, which was very, very interesting. If any of you find yourself in London, I would encourage you to go do that. And also, they have an interesting exhibit going on at the London Design Museum, where you'll be voting on the UK Designer of the Year, which we did when we went over and looked at the exhibit. However, I'm not going to tell you who we voted for because that would possibly sway the vote. So if you happen to be based in London or if you're going to be in London, and if you haven't been to the London Design Museum, it is by far one of my favorite museums. And I always find a way to talk my wife into going there every time we're in London, whether she likes it or not. The other question I get or I have gotten is, you know, what is the significance of this title, the podcast called Killer Innovations? Well, Killer Innovations, in my mind, is really an attempt just to try to differentiate between the ideas that we generate or incremental improvements to existing products. The definition that I apply to Killer Innovation is really a significant and highly profitable departure from whatever your current offerings are or practices that will be difficult to imitate. So what do I mean by significant? What I mean by significant is it must be easily recognized as being a new idea or approach, not just an extension to what exists today. It truly has to be a breakthrough, and it has to be a breakthrough that's easily recognized by the customer or by the marketplace. Secondly, what do I mean by highly profitable? You know, as the saying goes, you're either a business or a charity. In the case of charities, many cases, the ideas or the work that I've done on innovation and innovation processes have been used by charities. So I'm not trying to say that, the process or the process of generating innovations is purely limited to profitable businesses. But you have to understand what your profit is, whether that's revenue, in a for-profit business, or achieving the objective for charities or not-for-profits. So, there are many ideas that are generated, but few that can create entirely new industries, markets, with an income stream that creates growth, jobs, economies, and possibly even impact societies. The other thing is, it has to be difficult to imitate. To create competitive advantage, the innovation must be unique to avoid being copied. No, me too. It can't be just something that is a variation on what you'd seen before, maybe in a different color. It truly has to be unique. The question I always like to ask is, or when someone's pitching new ideas or new innovations to me is, really it's more of a gut check for me, is where's the wow? What is it in this idea that really is going to create something truly different? Is there a wow reaction when people hear about your idea? So why is it so difficult to find or create these killer innovations? Why is it that what we see in many cases in the marketplace are purely just something that's an incremental change or an incremental improvement to something that already exists? And believe me, it's not for a lack of effort. The problem is, though, at least in my opinion, is that we get caught in the trap of the human instinct to find the quick answer. We look for the first answer to a question. And let's face it, we as humans, we stop looking once we come to the first answer. At least the first answer that at least approximates the best answer to a given question. And we fail to look beyond the obvious. So what do I mean by this? Let me just use one quick example here, an experience that at least I know I have on a regular basis, and I'm sure all of you do, is what happens when, let's say, we misplace your car keys. Well, first of all, you begin searching, and when you can't find it, then the anxiety level gets up and you begin the frantic search. You go back and you retrace your steps, and once you find the keys, obviously the anxiety level depletes, and we stop searching. Isn't it funny though that we still use that euphemism that says, hey, where'd you find your keys? Hey, I found them in the last place I looked. Well, isn't it kind of obvious that once you've found the keys, you're not going to continue looking? Hey, I found the keys, but I'll just keep looking even though I found them. We don't do that. So we stop looking once we find it. The same thing applies when we're asked questions to either solve a problem or to generate a new idea. Depending on the question, as soon as we get that first answer that approximates the answer, then, or at least gives an answer that we're comfortable with, we stop searching. And the challenge here is that we tend to quit way too early in the process of generating ideas. And this, in reality, is typical to the problems of the normal brainstorming sessions that I'm sure we've all been involved with. You know those sessions. Let's get 30 or 40 of our brightest people into a room. Then let's pose a question. Typically, that question is let's make a we need a new idea that's going to generate, $500 million in revenue within the next 3 years. We end up with coming up with really incremental ideas, no real breakthrough thinking, because typically the people in the room are very synergistic. They all think the same. They all come from similar backgrounds. They all come from similar perspectives, lack of diversity. And there's also typically a real lack of follow-through. I don't know how many brainstorming sessions I've been in where you get somebody in the room, somebody volunteers to scribe. They scribble up a bunch of notes onto a flip chart, And then someone says, "Oh, I'll type those up and I'll send them around." And so someone rolls up the flip chart paper, sticks it into their arm. They dutifully go back to their desk, type them up, and then email them around to everybody. Then what happens? People get them, but there's no follow-through. You end up with thousands of ideas, or at least hundreds of ideas, and they all typically are fairly incremental, and it's very hard to filter out the ones that have the most value. And so there's really this lack of follow-through. And then the end result is that there's really no results to really speak of. So let's focus on the first issue. The first issue is really around the question. So you go into a brainstorming session, and what happens? Management says, "We need a new idea that's going to generate $500 million in revenue over the next 2 years. Go, you go and be part of this team that's going to come up with ideas." And the real challenge here is the difference between good ideas and great ideas is in the quality of the questions being asked. The typical questions we get, like I said, is go find an idea that's going to generate $500 million in 2 years, or let's build a better version of X, or we need to make our product or our service more flexible. And what we tend to find with these typical questions is that they elicit quick answers. We find the answer, we zero in on that answer, typically way too early in the process, and we count ourselves as done. However, in the back of our mind, we're still nagged by that whole issue of, did we really find the best idea? You know, there's kind of this dissatisfaction in the process because we have no confidence that we even completed the search, that we searched all the possible areas for ideas, and this truly is the best idea versus the first idea. So counter to the typical questions, what I've seen proven extremely successful is these non-typical questions. And these non-typical questions is not things that you can typically answer, or there's not a single right answer to the question. But what they do is they cause you to think beyond just simply answering the question. So an example would be, what happens when? So what happens when a customer uses your product? What happens when a potential customer gets up in the morning? What happens when they go shopping? What happens when? It's a great lead-in question to cause you to come up with a variety of ideas and try to look beyond just those simple first answers. Another great question, non-typical question that you can apply in these kinds of sessions where you're trying to get beyond the obvious is, if the opposite were true, so take an example. If the opposite were true about, let's say, the assumptions of your industry, and we all have assumptions of how our industry or business operates. You know, what are the rules? What are the kind of the unwritten rules in the industry? You know, that we always ship our product a certain way, we always price our product a certain way, we advertise our product a certain way. Typically, our customers are of a certain type by geography, socioeconomic, demographics, whatever the case might be. What if the opposite were true? List the assumptions of your industry, flip them 180 degrees. What would happen if the opposite were true? And what ideas does that cause you to really think about? The purpose really of these non-typical questions is really is to force you to search out multiple answers, to really come up with a set of ideas that are beyond the obvious ones that you get in a normal brainstorming session. And the more specific that you can make these non-typical questions, the better. Because then again, they can be, I shouldn't say specific. I guess maybe a more accurate way to say this is that wording these questions specific to your industry, to your business, allows the people participating in these idea generations to understand it in their own language and in their own terms. It's very hard to take a set of processes or rules or tricks of innovation and apply it to your business straight out of the book or straight out of something like this podcast. You truly do have to take these ideas or take these questions and tailor them to the language of your business, to the language of your industry. But keep in mind, to get the right answer, you need to be asking the right questions. In many cases, we skip over thinking about what questions we want to ask, and we rush to get the people together to generate the ideas. The general rule of thumb is that if you're going to run, let's say, 3 1-hour brainstorming sessions, you should be spending 30% of the total brainstorming time focused on developing the questions. And you should have those questions thought out before you start the brainstorming session. So in this case, if you're going to run 3 1-hour brainstorming sessions, you should commit at least an hour of deep thinking, of working out what those questions are before you go into that kind of a session. So, when you think about it, what we really need are these killer questions. These killer questions that are worded in such a way that they lead you to the path of these killer innovations. So, let me ask you a question. What if you had an exhausted list of questions that had previously led to killer innovations? Could you go, for instance, looking around at different killer innovations and back into a series of questions that would have led you to that innovation? If you had these questions in the past, again, thinking about innovations that you find just truly amazing, could you build up these questions, go back and find a series of the right questions that would have led the team to develop those ideas? Now, there's been a lot of people who've been working in this area, and in fact, I've been collecting and discovering these killer questions really, literally my entire career. When you think about looking at innovations, whether that be Federal Express, which I think is absolutely amazing, eBay, the mobile phone industry, whatever. When you look at those kinds of innovations and really trace back what would be the questions that would have caused you to at least be focused into the right area ahead of time, could you take those questions and apply them today to find innovations in the future? Now, like I said, I've been collecting and discovering these killer questions literally my entire career. And I've actually built up a personal set of about 75 questions that I use in these innovation sessions when I'm trying to work on either new ideas, new products, new technologies, whatever the case might be. And one of the objectives, or what I'm going to do going forward in the podcast, is I'm going to add on to the end of a podcast one of these killer questions. So over the next series of podcasts, or if you've you'll be able to at least hear what my personal set of killer questions are and how I applied them or how they've applied to previous innovations. So you can kind of see the thinking behind them. If you have killer questions that you'd like to share, email them to me at the podcast at philmckinney.com, and I'll put those into the podcast so we can share them with your other listeners. Or you can email them to me and I'll post them on the blog at philmckinney.com. Now, normally I would have comments turned on, but I'm getting spammed on the blog, so all comments are turned off. So if you email them to me, I'll post them up on up on the blog at philmckinney.com. And so, again, like I said, I've built up this list of about 75 of what I call these killer questions that I've used and have modified and found ones that worked better, whatever the case might be. And so again, at the end of the podcast, I'm going to share with you what these killer questions are. And going forward in the next couple of podcasts, I'm actually going to share with you on how I actually normally run one of these innovation sessions. So you can kind of get a feel for what I have found that works for me when you're actually trying to bring together a team to really create that next breakthrough product. So what is today's the killer question that I'm going to put on the podcast for today? The killer question is what is the largest hassle about using or buying your product or service that customers do not know they are putting up with? Again, what is the largest hassle about using or buying your product or service that customers do not know they are putting up with? Basically, because they don't know a better way is possible. Again, one more time. What is the largest hassle about using or buying this product or service that customers do not know they are putting up with? So, what are some examples of this? Well, one is FedEx. Before FedEx existed, if you went to an executive and said, "Hey, we can get that document sent overseas and have it in London by tomorrow," many executives would say, "Well, why would I do that? I'm, 7 days sending it through the normal mail. That's fine. I can live with that." But now, when you think about a business. How does a business survive without this express shipping? Whether it be FedEx or UPS or DHL or whatever, it's become really a normal, anticipated capability that every business leverages in just their day-to-day existence. Likewise, think about CarMax. And the whole purpose behind CarMax is what? To create a better way to buy used cars. Now, for those of you who maybe are in geographies and you're not familiar with CarMax, CarMax's basic precept is that it's a no-hassle buying of used vehicles. Very large lots, very large selection, cream of the crop used cars with excellent warranties once you buy it. So you never have to worry about buying a used car and then having to worry about that there's something wrong with it that you don't know about. And at the same time, there's no negotiation in the price. The price is shown on the vehicle. That's the price you pay. So you never have to be worried the person standing next to you is a better negotiator. It takes all of the discomfort of going out and buying a used car off the plate. Now, prior to CarMax, nobody thought about a new and alternative way to how do you go buy used cars. So these are just two examples, FedEx and CarMax. So again, the question, what is the largest hassle about using or buying this product or service that customers do not know they are putting up with? Again, because they don't know a better way is possible. And with that, we're coming up on about 23 minutes. I'm trying to keep these podcasts to about 20, 25 minutes. So I know some of my favorite podcasts, I've actually had them go up to over an hour, such as Adam Curry's Soundscape visit to London last week. If you haven't heard that, go over and listen to the Daily Source Code. It's great. So I'm going to wrap this up for today. One, thanks for listening. I live for the feedback, comments, and ideas. So please drop me a message. Let me know you're listening. Give me any feedback, suggestions on how to improve the podcast. I want to make this beneficial for you, and I want to be able to share with you at least some of my thoughts. But I'm also interested in getting you, the listeners, participating in this podcast. I don't want it to be just one way. So please, please, please. Drop me an email, podcast@philmckinney.com or Skype at phil_mckinney. Now, for those of you who've listened to the previous podcast, you know that I spend an enormous amount of time traveling. I do about 250,000 miles a year. I'm in London today, I'll be in Thornbury Castle in Bristol on the later part of this week. And then next week, I will be all over Europe, Amsterdam, Stockholm, Frankfurt, Bonn, back to London, and then going home the end of next week. I'm actually going to try to put another podcast up here from Thornbury Castle. It's just to, again, I'm really enjoying the whole podcast experience and the feedback from you and having a larger community of people who are interested in innovation and being able to interact with you. So again, I'll try to put another podcast up before the end of this week. If you're a regular listener, let me know and tell others. Share what I've got here. I really would appreciate that. Expand the user, the listener base. And also, don't forget, whatever directory you found my podcast at, whether that be Podcast Alley or Podcast Pickle or whatever, please make sure to go back, post comments, reviews, feedback on the show, vote. And again, like I said, I will talk to you hopefully later this week with another podcast. Thanks for listening.